Good evening and welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm Lucy Pone in Washington.
And I'm Michael Atit, also in Washington. Here are some of the stories we are covering today, Wednesday, March the 4th, 2015. The two leaders go back behind closed doors in Addis, and if they don't reach a peace deal tomorrow...
It could be a practical slap on the wrist for the participants, but it will have no structural effect.
And the new ambassador from South Sudan to the U.S. weighs in on the Security Council's move to place sanctions on the South Sudanese leaders.
We are very, very disappointed as a government. We are very dismayed by these sanctions because we think that sanctions will not resolve any problem in South Sudan.
We will have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus.
President Salva Kiir and rebel leader Riek Machar are engaged in a second day of face-to-face meetings to try to resolve the nearly 15-month-long conflict in South Sudan. IGAD negotiators have given the two until tomorrow to reach a final peace deal, but no progress was reported yesterday. The United Nations Security Council yesterday set up a framework to place additional sanctions on both warring parties. The country's foreign minister says sanctions would only pressure the government into signing what he calls a half-baked peace deal. John Tanza has more from Addis Ababa.
A visibly angry South Sudanese Minister of Foreign Affairs told reporters in Addis Ababa that the decision by the UN Security Council to impose sanctions on South Sudan is affecting this crucial phase of South Sudan peace talks. Barnaba Marial Benjamin says the South Sudan government has compromised on several demands of the rebels and that the international community should give them credit for this.
This decision completely blocks the peace process. If people are looking who is blocking peace process, the decision of sanctions actually blocks the peace process.
The United States, Great Britain and Norway, known as the Troika, issued a warning last week to the two warring parties to end the conflict now or face the consequences. The two warring parties have been meeting in the Ethiopian capital since last week. President Kiir and rebel leader Riek Machar met yesterday but could not agree on merging their two armies into a national army or on a system of governance during the transitional period. They continue to meet behind closed doors today. Marial says news of the sanctions has spoiled the mood of the negotiators.
It creates a non-conducive environment. It creates doubts in the mind of the people. Our people, our citizens of the Republic of South Sudan, are actually mesmerized and are completely, really wondering what is happening in the Security Council.
The U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry issued a strongly worded letter on Monday calling on the government of South Sudan and the rebels to reach a deal and end the violence, saying, quote, "Enough is enough. The leadership in Juba should not use legitimacy as a pretext for prolonging the conflict in South Sudan." Marial calls the pressure from the international community harassment.
It is a clear case of harassment. You are harassing a young nation. You are killing a young child, a young member in the family of nations, in the family of the community of nations.
The South Sudanese diplomat is calling on the international community to wait until the warring parties finish discussing outstanding issues blocking the progress at the talks. Marial claims the international community is jumping the gun.
Why don't you wait for what the African Union will say? Are these organizations on our continent without any meaning? They are here. African problems to be resolved by Africans themselves. Of course, we welcome the support of the international community. But I think the timing and the decision by the Security Council to speculate the issue of sanctions, I think is unfair. There is no justice in it.
The two parties have until tomorrow to reach a final peace deal. The chief IGAD mediator, Ambassador Seyoum Mesfin, told South Sudan in Focus last week that if the two warring parties fail to reach an agreement this week, IGAD will call for help from the international community to continue with the mediation process. South Sudanese are eagerly awaiting good news from Addis Ababa, but it appears they will have to continue to wait. There has been no word from the talks on progress made on any of the key issues of bonds of contention. For VOA News, I'm John Tanza, reporting from Addis Ababa.
As we have reported, no real progress has been reported at the talks. One analyst familiar with African politics says the reaction of the international community to lack of the progress in Addis will not be produce a good result. Girard Pionnier said imposing sanctions on the leaders of two warring parties might end up refueling the conflict. Pionnier tells South Sudan in Focus host John Tanza that the UN Security Council should instead learn from mistakes of the African Union and the regional bloc IGAD and take a different approach.
In any case, it could be a practical slap on the wrist for the participants, but it will have no structural effect because the real problem is not being discussed at present.
And what are they discussing if the real problems are not being discussed?
What they're discussing is who can be minister of this and that, who can exchange his position for that other one, and it's a kind of game of musical chairs, and, you know, it goes under the name of a government of national unity, which, of course, will never see the light of day, but this is basically the approach. And the problem is not to know who is going to be the minister of education and who is going to be the minister of finance.
The regional bloc, IGAD, have been talking and mediating these talks for almost a year. How would you assess their mediation strength?
Very poor, almost non-existent. First of all, because they do not exist as an organization. The Ethiopians are pulling in one way, not very convincingly. The Kenyans are going another way. The Ugandans are even part and parcel of the problem since their army is actually fighting on the ground in southern Sudan. The Eritreans are being kept out. The Somali government doesn't represent anything because it's a kind of ghost sitting in Mogadishu without the real power and structure behind him. So we have the weak trying to help the paralytic, and the result is not exactly running the marathon.
And what is the way forward with all this? What is the way forward?
I'm afraid the only way forward is more war. Because even if some kind of a peace agreement was signed, and even if the rebels had the courage to go to Juba where their life would be in danger, or for their life not to be in danger, they would need to bring Riak's army, and I doubt very much that Riak's army would be welcome in Juba. So even if all these hurdles, these obstacles were overcome, and if the people who go to Juba were not murdered, which could easily happen, then how is this going to work? This is, you know, a Rube Goldberg contraption. There is no logic or functionality in this so-called government, which, by the way, also has no more money, which with the fall in the oil prices, the drop in production, and the huge amount of money that the North is taking for the use of the pipeline, i.e. $25 per barrel, and then the so-called loan that the Southern government has to reimburse to the North. At most, the government in Juba has $800 million left per year.
That's Gerard Pionnier, an independent consultant in Eastern and Central Africa Affairs, and the former director for the French Center of Ethiopian Studies in Addis Ababa. He was speaking to John Tanza in Addis Ababa earlier today.
The UN Security Council voted unanimously yesterday to set up a legal framework required for sanctioning individuals and entities behind the conflict in South Sudan. Some observers say the UN threat is a good deterrent to force the warring parties to strike a deal by the March 5th IGAD deadline. But a policy analyst with the Sud Institute says imposing sanctions will complicate the peace process. Philip Thonaleo has the story from Juba.
Sud's analyst Abraham Awolik says the UN sanctions structure will target both sides.
First of all, the leaders will be limited from traveling and their assets will be frozen.
Awolik says other forms of international sanctions will likely include an arms embargo on exports and imports of military weapons and equipment. It could also include cutting diplomatic ties with South Sudan. Awali says such measures will have a huge negative impact on the country.
It seemed to encourage authoritarianism in the name of defense against what is going to be seen as an attack on the sovereignty of the country, especially if the leaders are sanctioned. It is not going to be seen as those individuals, because those individuals are acting for the state.
The UN Security Council voted yesterday to set up a panel of experts which will gather information on the flow of weapons to individuals undermining the peace process and violating human rights. More than 10,000 people have been killed and nearly 2 million others forced away from their homes during the conflict. After several months of on and off negotiations in Addis Ababa, Ethiopia, negotiators for both sides failed to agree on issues of governance, security reform, and power sharing. Awali says the frustration from the UN Security Council is understandable, but he insists there is no clear distinction between individual leaders and the wider South Sudanese society.
South Sudanese is a communal society. It's a society that is built on communal membership. And so when one person is sanctioned, it is not going to be interpreted as a sanction on that individual. Especially if the person holds a leadership position, it's going to be interpreted as a sanction on the whole society. Number two, our fear is that once you impose sanctions and the sanctions don't achieve the intended objective, you have severed the diplomatic efforts, because you cannot come back again and say, okay, let's talk and let's have a dialogue and let me advise you.
Awali says, seeing the U.S., Norway and the United Kingdom are facilitating the IGAD mediated talks, the UN sanctions will be viewed as aggression by the warring parties. He says diplomacy should still be given a chance.
Because essentially diplomacy is dead when you impose sanctions. What remains is another punitive measure that will keep adding on and on and on. And if it doesn't solve the problem, then you keep moving up and up, and the situation will become dire. Our hope is that the parties will read the sanctions as a demand by the international community to arrive at a quick solution.
Awali also suggests sanctions will derail the UN peacekeeping mission in South Sudan, which shelters hundreds of thousands of civilians at their camps. Awali says what happened on Saturday will determine whether or not sanctions go into effect. But he warns UN sanctions might not be respected in the Eastern African region.
So, by definition, the region will not accept it because of pre-existing situations already, in addition to economic conditions that exist. So, it is not going to be effective, but it will create a sense of animosity. So that is why we think that it is ill-advised.
Awali says engagement rather than isolation is always the preferred mode of operation. The two sides have been negotiating on and off for well over a year. For VOA News, I am Philip Thonaleo in Juba.
South Sudan's new ambassador to the United States says the government in Juba was surprised by the sanctions. He says even if the two parties at the talks in Addis Ababa miss tomorrow's deadline to make peace, the diplomatic effort to end the fighting should not be stopped. Mariama Diallo spoke with the ambassador in Washington and have this story for VOA.
South Sudan's newest ambassador, Garang Ding Akwang, says his government is not sure what might be next if the talks in the Ethiopian capital fail to produce a peace deal.
The plan B that we would like to initiate as a government is to continue in the peace process, continue to implement the agreements that have been signed.
The UN Security Council Tuesday unanimously adopted a resolution to put sanctions on South Sudan's warring factions as the deadline to reach a peace deal quickly approaches. Ambassador Akwang says he's really not in favor of the resolution that was drafted by the U.S. delegation led by Ambassador Samantha Power.
We are very, very disappointed as a government. We are very dismayed by these sanctions, because we think that sanctions will not resolve any problem in South Sudan. Instead, it will aggravate the situation more. Also, sanctions will send a wrong signal to the rebels.
Samantha Powers said the measure is intended to support regional group IGAD's mediation efforts between the parties and that a young generation's future is being held ransom by political actors who refuse to compromise.
This cannot continue, and those who frustrate peace must begin to pay the price.
Ambassador Akwang says his government was surprised because it has held many discussions with its American friends.
We have tried to talk and engage with the Americans, who are the sponsors of the sanctions, to express our view that sanctions will not solve any problem in South Sudan. Instead, keep engaging the parties as it used to do during the Naivasha agreement. And I think the United States has a moral obligation to continue to support South Sudan, continue to support any peace and reconciliation in South Sudan.
Ambassador Akwang is calling on the world to help bring peace to his country.
If the well is there washing, what we need is help us to bring peace to South Sudan as soon as possible. Help us to bring peace. This is the most important thing. Other things will be preconditioned upon peace.
According to the UN, the fighting has killed thousands and displaced 2 million people. In Washington, Mariama Diallo, VOA News.
You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. VOA's exclusive interview with rebel leader Riek Machar coming up after this.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what do you use the internet for?
I use the internet to do office work and get some health tips information.
I use internet mostly to check my emails, to reply people back, to be on Facebook. I love Facebook very much because it connects me to the people that I want. They are friends. I have friends all over, and whatever I would want to advertise, I do it on my Facebook direct. I don't need to pay for advertising.
Send and check your mail. You can use the internet to communicate in various ways. You can use it for research.
I'm a Kenyan staying in South Sudan, so I use internet to communicate to my family because it's cheap and it's easy. In most cases, internet also gives time. Maybe I present my photo and they can see me live. So internet is very important.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. What do you think about the UN Security Council's decision to apply sanctions, possibly on the leaders of the two warring parties in South Sudan? We put that question to some men and women on the streets of Juba, and their reaction was mixed.
I'm George Garang from the University of Juba, first year. My opinion on this sanction is that it will impact negatively on the innocent civilians of South Sudan, because sanction cannot affect these leaders. They will just remain comfortable, and these common people, civilians, will be the one who will suffer. So sanction is not the best solution. The best solution is this international community to be involved in the dialogue with good faith. Otherwise, if they are not impartial, they will not solve the crisis.
I'm Alfred Soro. I'm staying in Sukhajar. It's good to put sanctions on the leaders, because nowadays, even we the citizens, we are not benefiting from them. They are just doing their own thing for their own benefit. What I can recommend as a citizen, let new president or new leaders come to the power, because these guys, they have been there and they have done nothing, and they are doing nothing, and they will do nothing even, because they have that attitude of we are the one who liberated this country. So let us bring new leaders who can deliver something for us.
Okay, I'm Vicky. I'm staying in Atlabara. Yeah, because they refuse to understand. They refuse to bring peace. So what will people do? This is what we want even. If they refuse to bring peace, let the UN do the sanction or what they are.
I'm Joku Steven. It's another side is good, but, you know, it will hinder the peace process. Well, what I think basically now, it's good to put more pressure on them to at least sign the peace. You know, this process, the hindering of this peace process, it's not from the two leaders. It's the people behind them. It's, they are the one making the peace not to be signed, what is very important is to put the sanction on the important institution.
My name is Rosalind Keji from Kator. Yeah, the sanction is okay. And then we have to do elections so that it will help our people. We have to see who is doing good and who is doing bad.
My name is Kofi Dut. I'm staying in Gudele. I don't know anything about that.
Some Juba residents offering their views on the UN Security Council's decision to set up a framework for applying sanctions on leaders of both sides of the conflict in South Sudan if a final peace agreement is not reached by tomorrow's deadline.
Due to technical problems yesterday, we were not able to bring you the complete interview with Riek Machar. Today, we are bringing you the rest of the interview John Tanza conducted before Machar and President Kiir began their face-to-face meeting and before the United Nations vote as sanctions. Yesterday, we heard Machar say the two sides should be given more time if they don't reach an agreement by tomorrow's deadline.
The issues have been difficult with the issues that we discussed before, which we'll revisit, or even the issues that the Semitic committees have discussed. There's a good number that we need to go through. If we don't have a white smoke this time, we may have it another time.
But you're a decision maker. Everything lies in your hands. That's why President Kiir and yourself are here to finalize the issues that have been outstanding. If given an opportunity today, what would you do to finalize on these outstanding issues?
If it was one person decision, you would have a white smoke. But it takes two to tango in the peace process. So I do not know what the other side has. I have come here with an open mind to conclude the peace agreement. But I don't know what the other side is saying. But judging from their broadcast, like yesterday's broadcast, they seem not to be in that position to strike a deal.
But they also say you are not in a position to strike a deal. This sounds like a blame game.
Well, give us a chance. In that case, if it is a blame game, I don't like to play a blame game. I'm here. My team is here. We are ready to seriously give this round, they call it the final phase. We want to give it a serious go. And hopefully with a peace agreement being signed.
Just a final question. The U.S. Secretary of State, John Kerry, made a statement asking you and President Kiir to end this violence now. He's saying the time for saying enough is now.
I agree with him. That's why we're here. We should end it, should reach to an agreement. We should bring back peace to the country. We should not hide behind legitimacy and all that. That is now gone. Because only some few days for site to be quoted. So we should find a solution to this problem.
That is Rebel Leader Riek Machar speaking with John Tanza yesterday at Peace Talks in Addis Ababa. If you want to hear the complete interview with Riek Machar, please go to our website at www.voanews.com/South Sudan. That is www.voanews.com/South Sudan and hear the latest news on South Sudan.
In a country in desperate need of healthcare resources during a 14-month-long conflict, South Sudan's nationwide polio vaccine campaign last week provided a sign of hope in efforts to address basic healthcare needs. South Sudan is trying to achieve the global goal of completely eradicating polio. Mugume Davis Rakarinj has more for VOA from Juba.
For South Sudan health officials, tackling diseases like malaria, pneumococcal disease, and waterborne illness is daunting enough. It requires extraordinary determination and creativity to mount a nationwide campaign to completely wipe out a disease which, while rare, could devastate communities if health officials are not vigilant. Before starting their day, polio vaccinators Andrew Annette and her colleague, Olomoy Jaramungi, held a brief meeting at Al-Saba Children's Hospital to plan their door-to-door strategy. When they finish talking, they grab their plastic cooling containers, which hold doses of polio vaccine, and head to Haisujun neighborhood. a Juba suburb.
Hello. Hello. Hey, Alini.
At one stop, Edward swings open after Jaramungi knocks on an iron gate of a household, but he is informed there are no children living there. Using pieces of chalk, Jaramungi marks the gate with an O to ensure that no other vaccinators mistakenly stop at this household. About 20 meters away, a woman welcomes the vaccinators to her compound. Her dear Christopher is a mother of two children, 13 months old Musa Bari and her 4-year-old sister Sarah Muloka. Baby Musa cries as soon as the drop of polio vaccine lands in her mouth. Her dear Christopher is glad that her infant is being immunized.
When a child gets polio, he or she will become crippled. Therefore, he or she will not be able to play with others, and the mother will be forced to abandon her other activities and just concentrate on nursing the polio-affected child. I'm happy that my children have been immunized.
But vaccinator Andua Annette says not all mothers are as cooperative as Hadia Christopher.
Some of the parents refuse to bring their children for vaccination, saying the reason is their children are sick. So we normally ask them who told them that the child who is sick is not supposed to be given vaccination. I say no. This one is all for every child, even if the child is produced now, can be given the vaccination. We normally convince them. After convincing, they normally accept it.
Ranganai Matema, a UNICEF South Sudan health specialist, says these types of challenges happen all over the developing world. But this country's ongoing crisis highlights the urgent need to ensure a baseline of protection for children's health. The conflict has led to more displacements, making more children prone to vaccine-preventable infections. On top of that, heavy rains make it difficult to transport health workers, equipment and vaccines. Another challenge, Matema says, is insecurity, which means health workers are often unable to vaccinate in parts of Jonglei, Unity and Upper Nile states, where fighting continues. But even during the crisis, South Sudan has been relatively fortunate when it comes to polio. Matema says the country's last polio case was reported in June 2009, while some neighboring countries have reported numerous cases in the years since. But Matema says that's no reason to become complacent.
Anything can happen, especially because our, in South Sudan, the routine polio vaccination is very low. And with all this movement and people getting together, this is why we have 4 campaigns per year to make sure that the immunity profile of the community is very high and we don't get any outbreak.
Immunization campaigns have given health officials a chance to address other child health needs. During this polio vaccination campaign, for example, children are also given vitamin A supplements to prevent blindness and boost their immune systems. Madema says that during 4 national campaigns each year, health officials target 3.3 million children. But she says South Sudanese children need more to stay healthy.
We need to make sure that there's clean water, there's adequate sanitation, people are washing their hands, they are breastfeeding their children exclusively, they are giving proper nutritious food to the children.
Matema says if those things happen, South Sudanese stand a much better chance of avoiding preventable diseases. For VOA News, I am Mugume Davis Ruakarinj in Juba.
That's our show for this Wednesday. I'm Michael Atit in Washington.
And I'm Lucy Pony, also in Washington. We're glad you could be here. Join us again tomorrow for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.